voters in Houston, Texas, reject an anti-discrimination ordinance, just as Jacksonville prepares to have a new conversation about its own HRO. Good morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross. We're always live at 9. And now, subscribe to our daily podcast on iTunes and Stitcher. And just ahead, we'd like to take your calls on the new community conversations that are coming up around town, all around the issue of equality and human rights. Get on the line now with your thoughts at 549-2937. Also this morning, how hospice care here on the First Coast is going to change thanks to a national pilot program. Then later, veterans are honored this Sunday in St. Johns County. And don't miss my conversation with actor and comedian Paul Reiser as he performs this weekend at the Florida Theater. All of that ahead. But first this morning, a major announcement you might have heard about from Mayor Lenny Curry recently. Curry says he'll hold a series of community conversations over the next several weeks around the issues of discrimination and human rights in the city. Now, this is movement activists have long been pushing for. In particular, LGBT groups want Jacksonville to update its HRO, or Human Rights Ordinance. Back in 2012, an effort to do that failed by just one vote on the city council. This is an issue other cities are grappling with as well. For example, last night in the city of Houston, a year-long battle over gay and transgender rights ended as voters repealed an anti-discrimination ordinance. It had attracted attention from as far as the White House, sports figures, and Hollywood celebrities. With more on that and our local effort, let's welcome now Jimmy Midyet and Cam, both with the Jacksonville Coalition for Equality. Thanks for being here.
Thanks, Melissa.
Happy to be here.
And here's our question to callers. What are your thoughts and questions about Mayor Curry's opening up a series of community conversations on the Human Rights Ordinance in Jacksonville and equality? Give us a call at 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online to wjctnews.org/firstcoastconnect. Email and tweet the show. Jimmy, let's begin with you. Mayor Curry saying the first of these sessions is coming up Tuesday, November 17th at Florida State College at Jacksonville's downtown campus. The Jacksonville Coalition for Equality welcoming this news.
Absolutely the case. We're really appreciative of Mayor Curry for following through on his commitment to lead this community conversation. It's something that he talked about during the campaign. If you listen very closely to his campaign pledge, he said that he was not yet convinced of the need for these protections in Jacksonville, and he's giving the community an opportunity to make that case.
And so there will be three conversations, one at FSCJ, one at Edwards Waters College, and one at Jacksonville University. We'll give those dates and times in a moment, but Cam Waller, you chair the JCE's Gender Identity and Expression Subcommittee. Back in 2012, the Human Rights Ordinance was amended to take out language related to gender identity and expression. Last night in Houston, we saw that city's anti-discrimination ordinance repealed. There was a battle in that city when it came to transgender rights, and there was much hue and cry and controversy over whether that ordinance in particular would upset people going to the bathroom with a transgender person. When you look at the results in Houston, how do you see this conversation going forward in the city of Jacksonville?
That's a great question, because it's definitely a conversation that's already been having had in Jacksonville. And it's been had all over the country. And one of the things that we found is that in the states and in the cities that do have these ordinances, there has not been an increase in bathroom-related incidents. And we absolutely understand people's concerns, because everybody wants to go to the bathroom and be safe. We want the exact same thing. We don't want anybody to feel threatened when they use the restroom. And the importance of HROs is that they do protect everybody. They do not in any way allow people to go in and assault anybody. That's obviously still going to be illegal regardless of whether you're transgender. So we want everybody to be able to feel like they have a safe place where they can go and use the bathroom, because obviously that's a part of being able to live healthfully.
Jimmy Midyet.
Yeah, I have to agree with what Cam said. I mean, the tactics that we saw in Houston around this were unfortunate. There's a lot of misinformation and fear that gets spread during this sort of campaign. And my opinion, my take on it is frankly that this is what happens whenever you put the rights of a minority up to a public vote. It's not something that's really conscionable in our democracy.
We'll go to your calls in a moment at 549-2937. The city of Atlantic Beach did not put this up to a public vote recently. The commissioners decided to vote on it. There was backlash, however, when one commissioner lost her seat because she championed an updated human rights ordinance. And the voters expressed their frustration or their disagreement with her, Commissioner Maria Mark, at the ballot box. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think that's a pretty complicated issue. I mean, there were a lot of issues at stake in the Atlantic Beach elections, and this the HRO out there is certainly one of them. But if you look, even if we want to look back at Houston, the champion of the Houston Hero Ordinance was reelected handily last night to the Houston City Council. And if you look out broader at Jacksonville, the person who got more votes than anyone else on the municipal ballot this year was a huge HRO proponent. And that was the case, whether it was Tommy Hizzuri. So Tommy Hizzuri won with really impressive numbers, as did Joyce Morgan, Aaron Bowman, and Jim Love, all HRO supporters.
And I'm quoting here from the New York Times coverage of the Houston ordinance, which was repealed last night during that city's election. Supporters say the ordinance was similar to those approved in hundreds of other cities, prohibiting bias in housing, employment, city contracting, and business services for 15 protected classes, including race, age, sexual orientation, and gender identity. Of course, here in Jacksonville, sexual orientation and gender identity are still not included in our human rights ordinance. Opponents in Houston said the measure would allow men claiming to be women to enter women's bathrooms and inflict harm. And that simple message, no men in women's bathrooms, was plastered on signs and emphasized in TV and radio ads, turning the debate from one about equal rights to one about protecting women and girls from sexual predators. Cam Waller, do you have any concerns that a new effort to update Jacksonville's HRO could devolve into something like that here as well?
It's always a possibility. When it comes to anything that is a scare tactic, people are going to be extremely concerned. Obviously, the bathroom is a very private place for people, and you know, women already feel quite threatened by the possibility of being attacked there. So it's a completely understandable fear. And I do think that it is something that people could discuss, and that could kind of be a threat. But I think the value of these conversations that we do have coming up is the fact that we will be able to hear from experts, so that people can discuss their fears openly and can hear about whether this is something that they need to be worried about or not in the context of the HRO that we're trying to get updated.
And in a statement, Mayor Lenny Curry is quoted as saying that in recent years, organizations around the country have been leading discussions about this topic. While there are widespread opinions, I'm most concerned about our Jacksonville citizens and commit to learning more to determine local solutions that address local needs. That's this series of local conversations, Jimmy.
That's right. I mean, and that's what we're so excited about. I mean, here we are in Jacksonville. Cam and I are both natives of Jacksonville. This is a place where we live and we see ourselves remaining. It's very important to send a message that Jacksonville is a fair city, a tolerant city, a place that's open for business. And that's surely what Mayor Curry has in mind as he wants to grapple with Jacksonville, the experience of discrimination in Jacksonville, and the solutions that we can craft here in Jacksonville.
Let's go to your calls right now. 549-2937 to join us. Mark is on the West Side. Hi, Mark. Good morning.
Good morning. You know, this is why I think I hate most politicians is, you know, and I support the HRO, but it sounds like the mayor wants to have your lead tag was the mayor wants to have a conversation and find out the opinions of Jacksonville. But at the same time, it sounds like this is more an educational thing, like, yes, this is where we're headed, and to allay your fears, we're going to talk about it with these experts and everything, which is fine, but you need to say one or the other. You know, it can't be both. And if he really wants to get the opinion of Jacksonville before he moves forward, so that's going to be okay if the majority of people in Jacksonville say, yes, let's continue to discriminate.
Cam Waller.
That's a great question. I think that the fact that we are having the opportunity to have these conversations is a good thing, and it is something that we're very thankful to the mayor to. Being able to hear from a wide variety of people, whether they're people from the community, whether they're experts from within the community, will allow everybody to talk about things from different points of view. We're going to be able to talk about the various things that concern us in very, very specific areas. And these are things that are very dear to people. People's religious beliefs are very dear to them. People's businesses are very dear to them. And people's families are very dear to them. So I do think that being able to have these conversations is a positive thing. And we are going to be able to hear from the community. And after that, we're going to be able to entrust this issue in the hands of the mayor and of our elected representatives on the city council.
And Mark, I think you make a very good point in terms of you know, why are these conversations taking place? What's, you know, where do they exist in this process? And frankly, there are a lot of folks that I've talked to who have questioned the need to have this series of conversations, considering the fact that we're going to be going into a legislative process with this again with the city council. And to them, I push back a little bit, and not that I'm pushing back necessarily to you, but I would say that it is the case that having well-designed and thoughtful conversations around these issues will help to allay some of the fear that we have been discussing. I mean, we need to have people in Jacksonville understand what it means to be transgender. It is not a license to be a predator. It is not anything that's scary once you actually understand the experience of transgender people. And I have the utmost faith and confidence in Mike Williams and the JSO to protect our public safety and to indicate that somehow the police can't keep us safe isn't to me a good message.
And the three sessions that the mayor has convened that are open to the public and free. The first one will talk about supporting the needs and well-being of families. The second one deals with religious freedom, thought, and beliefs. The third, understanding the law and its effects on business. So those are the three areas of discussion. Kevin is downtown. Hi, Kevin. Thanks for holding. Good morning.
Good morning, Karen. Good morning to both of you. I'm a little perplexed. Super irrigation or subirrigation is the need to be charitable, but not really being charitable at all.
Hey, Kevin, we're having a little trouble hearing you. Can you speak up a little?
Can you hear me better now?
Yeah.
Okay. My question was, the last administration had the opportunity to lead the city a little forward with lesbian, gay, transgender community, and he pushed away from it. Do you think this is a peace offering because of politics, or do you think this is a genuine discussion on how something that is to so many people is deviant behavior can be addressed in our city?
All right. Let's talk for a minute about the previous administration. He brought that up. Of course, your organization and others, the Jacksonville Coalition for Equality, lobbied the previous administration on this as well. Cam.
I actually was not mm-hmm. part of the JC at that point in time, uh-huh. so I think that Jimmy can probably speak
okay.
more to that.
I'm happy to. Yeah, we absolutely tried to work with Mayor Brown, had a lot of respect for his for his administration and the way that he approached many issues, but unfortunately, his record on LGBT issues was not stellar. And in fact, it's been the case that that Mayor Curry, I think, is the first sitting mayor of Jacksonville to ever utter the acronym LGBT and to talk about the contributions of gay and lesbian people to our city. And I don't believe that that's an act of political appeasement or any sort of political calculation on his part, because he is a Republican, and typically Republicans aren't known for being out front on this. I believe that Mayor Curry is conscientious in doing this because he sees it as a need for the city that he leads.
Lots of tweets on the community conversations Mayor Curry is set to discuss human rights in Jacksonville. Jay tweets the show, "Equality is not a matter for public debate. Had we left civil rights to a popular vote, we'd still have colored and whites only signs." Ken tweets the show, "Disregard Houston. Justice will prevail. This isn't even a speed bump on the road to righteousness." And the number to join the show is 549-2937. Ingrid in Avondale is with us now. Hi, Ingrid. Good morning.
Oh, hi. I just wanted to say that, you know, I'm an open and accepting person and pretty much agree with all aspects of the HRO, except I cannot get around this bathroom issue. And my issue, I have no fear of someone assaulting me in the bathroom. It's not fear-based. I'm really not worried about that. It's more an issue of that a women's bathroom is different than a men's bathroom, and that there are things that go on in there that no one with a Y chromosome will ever have to deal with, things like menstruation or using an area to nurse your baby, or women with incontinence who need help sometimes. I remember being in a restroom where there was an elderly woman who was on her honeymoon. She had had an accident, needed to come in the bathroom. All the women in the bathroom were helping to clean her. I know that's an isolated incident, not something probably going to happen all the time. But I feel like it's an invasion of my privacy, of things that I need to handle in the bathroom that are not just a matter of a simple in and out. And I just feel uncomfortable about it. And it's not fear. It's just I'd really just rather not have men or people with Y chromosomes, I should say, in the bathroom with me. So I just wanted to kind of put that out there and see what other people thought about that. And thanks for taking my call.
Ingrid, thanks for that. Cam Waller, I think that's a question that's bound to come up at some of these, a sentiment that's bound to come up at some of these public forums. What about her point of view?
That's an extremely understandable point of view. Obviously, as somebody who has spent a significant part of my life in women's bathrooms, because that's where I was told that I was always supposed to go, I definitely do understand, the things that go on, and there are extremely private, to each person and to the physiological, aspects of having two X chromosomes. And I think that the most important thing in any bathroom is for everybody to respect each other's privacy, regardless of what chromosomes you do have. I have had many uncomfortable encounters in women's bathrooms before I came out, just because people did not think that my way of presenting myself was appropriate for being there, even though I didn't have any other safe space to go. And I think that is kind of the heart of it for a lot of us. I don't have a bathroom where I feel entirely comfortable because I don't have an Y chromosome and I don't have the characteristics of somebody with two X chromosomes. But I do know that regardless of what bathroom I have to go into, I'm only there for what I have to take care of, not for what anybody else is doing. And I do think that is the case with most people. Everybody wants to be respectful and to be respected in return.
Tim is in Atlantic Beach. Go ahead, Tim.
Yes. I just wanted to throw out sort of a counter argument regarding the Houston issue, where they're saying, we're afraid that men will come in the bathroom. I think the problem with that is I don't really see anything changing if we do have equality, equal rights for LGBT and transgender people, because there's really nothing stopping a man from, walking into a woman's bathroom today. I mean, if they wanted to be subtle about it, certainly they could dress in women's attire if they were afraid of being called out on it. But, there, a man could certainly walk in today and do all the harm that people are afraid of without having, the human rights ordinance passed. So I feel like it's not really a valid argument to prevent, acknowledging equal rights. And I'll take the comments off of here.
All right. And a whole range of opinions. Let's close with you, Jimmy Midyet.
Well, I think that, you know, listening to Ingrid and Tim, you know, presenting the different sides of the bathroom argument, and hearing Cam's lived experience in trying to determine which restroom is appropriate for him to use, shows where we are. But I think that Ingrid, and I appreciate that call from her, it really puts us on the right road, because she has fear. She expressed it not as fear, but as another way. And y'all went into some scientific thing, a biology lesson that I don't know about chromosomes or whatever. But I'll say this to Ingrid, which sort of affirms what Tim said. It's very likely that Ingrid has been in the restroom with transgender women before. She wouldn't know it. This is not a license for men to just walk into the women's room. This is a license for people who are transgender to go into the appropriate restroom for how they present. And that's really what we're talking about. And frankly, I have met transgender men who have shoulders that are much more broad than mine, who can grow really fantastic beards. And I can tell Ingrid that she probably wouldn't want that transgender man in her restroom if she's concerned about these things. So there's a lot of demonization, there's a lot of fear, but these community conversations that are coming up are our opportunity to dispel those fears, to demystify this stuff, and talk about the reason that this is actually useful for our city.
It will continue. The first one is coming up November 17th at 6 o'clock at the FSCJ downtown campus. That will be looking at supporting the needs and well-being of families. There will be another one December 3rd at the Edward Waters College campus looking at religion. And then on December 15th, JU is hosting a third forum, Understanding the Law and Its Effects on Business, all related to this issue. Jimmy Midyet and Cam Waller kicking this off on our program. Thanks so much for being with us this morning.
Thank you, Melissa.
Thank you.
And much more still ahead later in the hour.
It's funny, you know, when I get on stage, I always say it's sort of like getting together with old friends that you haven't spoken to in a while. Because whoever it is that was watching Mad About You, whoever was reading the books, they're going through the same life trajectory that I am.
Don't miss it as actor and comedian Paul Reiser joins the show. It's a preview of his appearance at the Florida Theater this weekend. But up next, changing the face of hospice care in our area. We'll explain in a moment.
Russia loses a plane over Egypt. Tragic details emerge as people around the world continue to grieve over Russia's worst ever aviation disaster. A plane down, accident, or hints of things to come in Putin's vision for his country in the war zones. Next time on The Takeaway from WNYC and PRI, Public Radio International. Weekdays at 2 on 89.9 WJCT.
Sweeping changes could be in store for Duval Public Schools. School zone boundary shifts, school uniforms, and underperforming schools being converted into special academies. WJCT's Community Thread invites the community to join in one big conversation with Duval County Superintendent Nikolai Vitti. Log on to wjct.org/communitythread to submit your questions or RSVP to be a part of our studio audience on November 12th.
Looking for fresh music? Join us weeknights at 7 for After Hours. You'll hear everything from jazz to electronica, only on 89.9 FM After Hours.
Welcome back. Well, it's being billed as a program with the potential to fundamentally change the way healthcare is delivered in this country. Medicare Care Choices starts on January 1st of next year. Now, this pilot program will feature qualified patients receiving both hospice care and curative services at the same time. That is a big change. A local organization has been chosen to be part of this new way of treating Medicare patients in a landmark 5-year study. Phil Ward is the chief operating officer at Community Hospice of Northeast Florida. They're one of 140 organizations around the country that will be taking part in Medicare Care Choices. Phil, thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Melissa.
Very exciting news for Community Hospice.
Oh, I agree. This was a process that we began the application a couple of years ago. So excited to be included.
Now, traditionally, if somebody goes into hospice care, they're foregoing seeking any kind of cure for their illness. So this is a huge paradigm shift, isn't it, in the way that Community Hospice looks at patient care?
Yes, and you would we call it concurrent care. So there has been up to this point what we would describe as a terrible choice, that you have to give up or forego that curative treatment. For the first time, we're going to be able to offer care to a select group of people. This is for the diagnoses of COPD, CHF, cancer, advanced cancer, and HIV. But for those patients, they're not going to be required to give up their curative treatment while they're seeking care from our organization.
And how does this fit into a larger effort nationwide to really transform the system of care around the country?
Yes. When you look at the system of care, one of the things we understand is that there is a growing group of people with multiple chronic conditions that are moving into an area of healthcare that we would call they need palliative care. They need symptom control and management over a comprehensive, looking at spiritual issues, emotional issues, social issues, as well as medical issues. Right now, there is a gap of care, we believe, because of the focus on curative, and then you move into end-of-life care. This is going to help us fill that gap in between the two. As the illness is continuing to advance, but you might not be in that area that says, I have a defined 6-month prognosis of end-of-life care. We believe that this is one of the gaps that is affecting the quality of care and should be the focus of the healthcare reform movement.
So beginning in January, this begins. Can you give us an example of how it would work, say, with a patient that is under your care?
Yes. These are going to be patients that their symptoms are such where they're having multiple physician visits. They've had multiple hospitalizations. So you're seeing an exacerbation of symptoms that are going to identify them as patients that are going to need an additional level of intervention. So the patient might be in the hospital setting and identified for one of our palliative consults. As we're consulting with the patient, the first thing that we're going to do is make sure that we go through a goals of care discussion, help them understand the disease progression, and then our focus is going to be empowering that patient to begin to make decisions in their care. They understand not only disease progression, but what their options in care continue to be. So at that point, we're going to give them the option of coming under our care. And I will tell you, for what we would call care coordination, it's really going to be someone to talk to, someone to give advice, someone to guide them through the process of care in this advanced illness stage.
And do you foresee that this will give patients a chance at a much longer, or at least somewhat longer, lifespan?
Absolutely. The research demonstrates that palliative care does extend life. Although we know we're not looking at the quantity of life, but the quality of life, the fact is that when you get the pill burden under control, when you get the symptoms under control, when you begin to deal with the other issues, it not only improves quality of life, the research demonstrates it increases the quantity of life as well.
And Community Hospice chosen in part because you have a national reputation as one of the top hospice care facilities in America, right?
Yes. And we're very proud to have been recognized as an elite status hospice. This is 2 years in running, which actually puts the quality of our program among the top 2% of hospices nationally. And we do believe that that commitment, not only with the quality of our care, the more than 3 decades of service to this community helped us in that application process.
This is exciting, but it doesn't begin till January. So yes. People that are interested in learning more, they'll need to wait a little longer.
Yes. Yeah. And they can certainly begin getting information. You know, we have our contact information. The 407-7700 line is a number that you can call to get additional information. And we're building the systems. We're building the protocols. And then the January 1st start date is set by Medicare. We'd love to offer it today, but in January 1st, we'll be allowed to offer this by Medicare.
It's Medicare Care Choices beginning in January via Community Hospice of Northeast Florida. Thanks so much for joining us.
My pleasure.
He is Chief Operating Officer Phil Ward with us today. And in a moment, St. John's County honoring its veterans this weekend. We'll tell you about it. Plus, don't miss it as actor and comedian Paul Reiser joins the show.
Recession ended 5.5 years ago. Unemployment is down, growth is up, but how does the economy feel?
We are extending ourselves a lot, but you know, you have to take a risk and work hard to make it in this country, and so that's what we're trying to do.
I'm Kai Rizdahl. Our new series, My Economy, next time on Marketplace. It's from 8 p.m.
Weeknights at 6 on 89.9 WJCT, community-supported public radio.
WJCT and ViStar Credit Union present the 13th annual Mr. Rogers Sweater Drive. The drive runs through November 30th and accepts new and gently used men, women, and children's sweaters, jackets, socks, and blankets. Contributions may be dropped at WJCT and all ViStar Credit Union locations and two men in a truck at 8849 Arlington Expressway. For more information, log on to WJCT.org. Contributions will be donated to selected nonprofit facilities within the First Coast area.
Relax Radio is the great American songbook, oldies and light jazz.
It's the radio station I was always looking for and never found until now.
Harry Moonbeam's home in a jar.
Relax Radio is the station you can listen to all day on your HD radio. Make a $120 gift to WJCT and you'll receive an HD radio so you can tune in to Relax. Call 904-353-9528 for more information.
Sure. Welcome back. Well, Veterans Day is next week, but this Sunday, St. John's County will get a bit of a head start with a free special veterans event. It's called Honoring All Veterans. The theme this year highlights post 9/11 Iraq and Afghanistan veterans. Here with a preview now, we welcome Bill Dudley, Chairman, and Michael Rothfeld, Secretary of the Veterans Council of St. John's County. Gentlemen, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
All right. So this Sunday is the big event at Anastasia Baptist Church. This is free and lots going to be happening. What's on the agenda?
Bill, you want to?
Yes. We're as you said, we are going to be hosting our honoring veterans program at Anastasia Baptist Church. The doors of the church will be open at 1:30. We're going to have lots of displays in the atrium area there of various veterans support groups in St. John's County that will be there supporting this this program as well. But the purpose of it is to honor our veterans and to we'll be highlighting the Canines for Warriors. There's a documentary and film that we'll be doing that Sunday afternoon, and we have lots of other parts of the program as well, like our St. Augustine High School chorus group that's going to be singing.
Oh, very nice.
We've got the Guitars Guild from St. Augustine High School that's going to be there performing as well. And we have a featured speaker who is our Chief of Staff and the National Guard. Colonel Canzonero is going to be there as our primary speaker.
Kind of a star-studded lineup, huh?
Absolutely. I'd like to give you some more specifics. It's this Sunday, the 8th. at Anastasia Baptist Church, which is 1650 A1A South in St. Augustine. Free admission and parking. We're going to have on display some Humvees from the Florida National Guard, as well as the Northeast Florida Military Museum, Korean War veterans, the Vietnam Veterans of America, the Missing Man Table by Rolling Thunder, Missing in America Project, and many, many more. Bill went over the entertainment, but one of the features is, of course, the canine documentary, which premiered on WJCT a few months ago.
That's right. It's a local organization, Canines for Warriors.
In Nocatee, yes.
Yeah. And what an amazing organization, using service dogs to help warriors, help servicemen and women heal from the wounds, the physical and the psychological wounds they've suffered.
I want to mention they're rescued service dogs.
Yeah.
90%, I believe, are rescued dogs. And they now, I'm not too familiar with the expansion, but I know they quadrupled their capacity for warriors. And this film goes into detail with Sherry Duval speaking about the founder and president, speaking about the canines, how they're trained, how they bond with the warriors, how the warriors are taken out to the shopping malls, to stores, and so that they adjust to the public. It's an outstanding facility.
And as you mentioned, you're honoring all veterans, but in particular, veterans who served post 9/11.
That's right. The ones who have served in Iraq and Afghanistan. And Melissa, so many of these veterans are coming home. They're suffering from PTSD, and they're struggling to re-engage, if you will, back into civilian life, back into family life, and back into their communities. And this is a tremendous way to be able to help these veterans. And this program, and science doesn't know why. You know, the medical community doesn't know why this works. We just know that it does work. We've seen terrific results with these veterans getting these dogs. And the improvement just almost immediately in their lifestyle and their ability to be able to fit back into the community and to see their lives turn around at home as well. So we're very pleased to be able to highlight this and to have this documentary and this film that we can show and acquaint the community with what's happening with these veterans.
Absolutely. As you mentioned, we did screen it on WJCT television. If you didn't catch it then, this is another opportunity to see this important film and to be part of this important event. It is free, open to the public, lots of parking, and lots to do, lots to take part in, lots of community groups, lots of food and drink, cash prizes to the St. Augustine High School students. And this is interesting as well. Children of the military receiving prizes for their award-winning essays about these service dogs. That's pretty cool as well.
It is. It's an essay contest. We've sponsored an essay contest every year that we've done these documentaries. But this year we decided to expand it and open it up to students of military families. And we've had just an overwhelming response to this. And we've had some outstanding essays that have been submitted. I received these, some of them, about a week ago, one evening, and I started reading, and I couldn't stop reading them. You know, they were just such quality essays that have been submitted.
That's got to be gratifying that children are so moved to write so movingly about adults who've served.
Exactly right, yeah. And within the veterans community, the military community, so many of these kids, their parents are still serving. And so a lot of these kids have firsthand knowledge of what's happening with PTSD.
Absolutely. So many in this area. So again, it's the Veterans Council of St. Johns County hosting a free veterans event this Sunday at 1:00 at Anastasia Baptist Church. That's on A1A in St. Augustine. This event is titled Honoring All Veterans, and everyone's invited. Over 25 local veterans groups will have a presence there, and there's a grand parade as well.
There's a grand parade on November the 11th on Veterans Day. This is the first ever, Melissa, this is the first ever military parade in St. Augustine. Can you believe that? The oldest city in the nation.
Get out of here.
It's having its first military parade ever.
How is that even possible?
Isn't that true? And we are doing a Veterans Day parade, and it is going to be a huge parade. And we're so happy.
Are you behind this?
Yes.
I figured as much.
Yes. And,
you guys had a successful referendum last night for the school system,
we
too.
We did. We
so
certainly did.
St. John's County's just got all kinds of stuff going on, doesn't it?
Well, in addition to having some of our military, senior military leaders that's going to be on the reviewing stand, we also have representatives from the Spanish, the British, and the French that are going to have delegates there with senior military officers as well. Everyone that's ever had a flag that's flown over St. Augustine is going to be represented.
All right. Well, gentlemen, thank you both so much for joining us. Again, that free event Sunday at 1 at Anastasia Baptist Church with the parade, the first military parade in the history of St. Augustine on Veterans Day. Bill Dudley, Chairman, and Michael Rothfeld, Secretary of the Veterans Council of St. John's County. Thanks so much.
Thank you very much for having us.
We are back in a moment with actor and comedian Paul Reiser. Thanks, you guys. And it's...
In California, organizations that counsel women not to get an abortion will now be required to tell them where they can get an abortion.
It's like telling a Jewish synagogue that, you know, they can have their service and do their thing, but they have to have a large sign saying where people can go to pray to receive Jesus.
The collision of abortion rights and freedom of religion, later on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Today at 4 on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
Listen to After Hours to relax with music that spans the world in all styles from classical to doo-wop. Weeknights at 7, only on 89.9 FM.
Welcome back. Well, finally this hour, he is the beloved actor, comedian, and producer who starred in the critically acclaimed NBC series Mad About You. Paul Reiser is in town this weekend for a stand-up show at the Florida Theater. It's a return to his roots in stand-up comedy. I spoke with him about his career in comedy, so take a listen. Paul Reiser, welcome to the show. Thanks for being with us.
My pleasure.
Lots of excitement that you're coming to the Florida Theater. People don't always realize that you like to get out and do stand-up, right?
That's why I need you.
Oh!
You to be my middle person between me and the fine people of the Jacksonville area.
I see. I'll be the middleman, middlewoman.
Yeah, maybe be the middlewoman. Yeah, it's funny when people say, hey, I never knew you did stand-up, which is understandable because I hadn't done it for a long time. But that's what I started doing, and that's what I always loved, and that's what I intended to get back to.
Uh-huh.
But around 1992, I got I put it aside. Just because I got busy with Mad About You, and then after Mad About You, I was kind of happy staying put for a while. And suddenly I realized that I kept kicking the can down the road, and it wasn't until about 3 years ago I went, I need to get out there and do this if I'm going to do it. So I just kind of jumped back into the pool. The same way I did when I first started when I was 19.
Funny.
It was an interesting little flashback.
What's it like doing it now? When I'm sure when you started and you're 19 years old, you're young, you're hungry, you have no money. You had no act. Now you have a whole different act, I'm sure.
Yeah,
there's no pressure. You're just kind of doing it for the fun of it, right?
It was, for sure. It's a lot more fun this time around. I mean, I always loved it, but... You know, first of all, you know, at this point, when the audience is anybody who comes to see me, they're coming on purpose. they're coming down because they know me. They like something that they saw, they read, or whatever. And so, you know, you're getting a room full of people who are already, you know, of a mind, and you're of a certain, you're connecting on some wavelength. But also, you know, just being in your 50s is better than your 20s. I know it's not supposed to be, but it kind of is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You're more formed. You have more opinions, right or wrong. You have more opinions. You have more experience. You have more material. You have more things to talk about. And it's funny, you know, when I get together, I say when I get on stage, I always say it's sort of like getting together with old friends that you haven't spoken to in a while. And because whoever it is that was watching Mad About You, whoever was reading the books, they're going through the same life trajectory that I am. So, you know, when you talk about something personal to yourself, it ends up hitting the button with other people.
Sure.
They're going, yeah, we know exactly what you're talking about.
Right. And people just loved you and Helen Hunt together. So many people related to that relationship story.
Yeah, I won't be bringing Helen, just to disappoint anybody.
No, that's very sad. That's very sad. No, but when you do your act now, how much of it is your personal life, relationship stuff? Do you get political in the act? Is it
no,
more?
No, I don't get political. I never really did get political, and it's, you know, almost entirely personal. I always tell my wife and my kids, I said, you know, if I didn't have them, I'd have no career. I have to have somebody around who's doing funny stuff. You know, it's not all about my family, but it's a lot. You know, as I say, you get to a certain age and you can't help but go through things, whether it's, you know, raising kids and trying to be, you know, a better parent than you are actually capable of being, trying to be a better partner than you yet know how to be. And, you know,
I bet you're a good husband. I bet you're what they call a mensch, aren't you? You're
can
like
I
a
get
really.
My wife on the phone. Would you mind just reminding her that? I think I'm delightful, but there have been rebuttals to that argument.
What about? What does she take issue with?
Well, let me get her on. It'll be so much easier than she would represent.
That would be really interesting.
You know what? I've gone on stage and I'll start talking about, you know, some dopey fight that you have with your wife that keeps escalating, and you know, and I end up saying jokingly but seriously, I go, see, this is why I have to go on the road, because I can't talk about this at home. I don't have that many people supporting me in my house.
Oh my gosh.
But you know, they're all good. You know, my son will go, Dad, what was that? What were you and Mom arguing about? I went, you know what? I couldn't even tell you.
So now,
married stuff.
The married stuff. Anyone can relate to that. But when you started out, who influenced you as a young comic? Was it like the Lenny Bruces? Was it that whole era? Who?
No, I was a little after Lenny Bruce. I didn't catch on to him till later. For me, it was George Carlin.
Carlin.
It was Robert Klein, David Brenner, Bill Cosby, Woody Allen, and those guys were, you know, and when you're young and impressionable, very often you go up and you just start imitating people that you know, you know. So there were, you know, I went up and I was doing a very bad Woody Allen impression as a kid, not on purpose, but just that thing. It just sort of came out that way. Mm-hmm. And then in time, you find your own style. But those guys, you know, still Robert Klein and George Carlin were big influences.
What do you think about what's happened with Cosby today?
It's just it's a heartbreaking thing. On no matter how many ways you look at it, there's nothing good there. You know, it's hard for people to make a distinction and at a certain point, understandably, to, you know, what if you don't like what you think you know about somebody, and on the other hand, what their work is, you know, and you just look at their work, you know, this was a brilliant stand-up, and then you start hearing other things, you go, I think I'm having a hard time enjoying that part.
Now, in terms of you, stand-up is something you love to do. Would you ever go back to another sitcom? I know you're doing movies, you're doing stand-up. Would you ever go back to television?
Yeah. I'm doing a show now called Red Oaks, which is on Amazon. And it is, which is a weird thing to say. I'm on a show on Amazon. They make television? I thought they just sell books and sneakers. But, it, you know, it's a whole different world. The way people watch TV now. So it's, you know, you sit down and you watch an entire season in one sitting and they're done. But yeah, I feel, in a way, I feel like I'm now where I used to be, which is going out and doing stand-up is sort of the default mode. I constantly do that. And along the way, when something great comes up, I get to go do that and then go back to the road. But I'm also developing about four different TV shows now, one of which I would be in, and the other three I'm just going to write and produce. But yeah, I like that medium, and I like that world. And you know, it's nice to come up with shows that you yourself would like to see. You know,
sure.
Sometimes you go, well, I, because there's a lot of great stuff on that I have no idea how they do. You know, like, you watch something like Ray Donovan or Homeland, you go, or House of Cards, and go, well, these are fantastic shows. I don't know how to do that. That's mm-hmm. not my world, but I can sure appreciate it.
But you know how to do what you do so well, and you've entertained so many people that we'll look forward to seeing what you do next.
Nicely said, nicely done. I will start with the people of Jacksonville. Now, I understand that's a beautiful theater. Everybody tells me you're going to love that theater.
It is. The Florida Theater is a storied kind of place, so I think you will enjoy it, Paul Reiser.
Well, I look forward, and I will see you and the fine people of Jacksonville next Saturday the 7th.
Excellent. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you, Melissa.
That is Paul Reiser. He will appear at the Florida Theater Saturday night, November 7th, and we are now being told it's a BOGO. You can buy one ticket, get one free to see Paul Reiser Saturday night. What a great deal. Some tickets still available. Get your tickets to see Paul Reiser now at floridatheater.com. And that's our show. Our producer is Sean Birch. Michelle Corum running the board today. Diane Rehm is up next. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT FM Jacksonville, your community, your world. And we will be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.